opening the meeting at 7:03. The invocation will be done by Mike Spence, and the flags moved by Deputy Shoemaker.
Father God, we want to thank thee for this opportunity as the Western Unified School District Board trustees and concerned community members and staff. We're grateful for our staffs, for the parents, and patrol this district, and ask a blessing upon them. And upon this meeting, that will focus on the educational needs of all children. And this we're praying in Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call.
Mrs. Bowles?
Here.
Mr. Bowles?
Here.
Mr. Schultz?
Yeah.
Mr. Cox?
Here.
Ms. Shoemaker?
Here.
Mr. Noel?
Present.
And Mrs. Lace Castillo?
Here.
Our first order of business will be the student achievement plan at Merced.
Good evening.
Good evening. Do you have any handouts by any chance?
What's that now?
Do you have handouts or not?
I don't, but everything I'm going to, what you'd be looking at, probably be up on the slide. Thank you for giving me this opportunity to talk about Merced tonight. As indicated, Merced's API went from 815 points to 839 points, a 24-point gain in 1 year. We also went from 784 points in 2006 to our present score of 839 points, a 55-point gain in 2 years. Our 2008 AYP in language arts increased by 7.8% overall, and our 2008 AYP in math increased by 3% overall. The greatest gain in AYP was in third grade in both ELA and math. We lost some momentum in math and language arts in second and in math in fourth grade. Third grade has traditionally been problematic, so I was encouraged to see as the grade level to see that this was the grade level with the greatest gains in AYP and API. The greatest gains in API for our significant subgroups included our Hispanic student population and our socially economically disadvantaged student population. It should be noted that the socially economically disadvantaged student population increased in size by 30 students from 2007 to 2008. All significant subgroups showed improvement. When we compare Merced's AYP to the district's AYP, we see both percentage advantages and losses. The greatest difference in Merced's favor is noted in third grade. In fourth grade language arts, the district averaged 8% better than Merced. In fifth grade science and language arts, the district scored an average of 7% better than Merced. 2007 actions for EL students help contribute toward API gains. I feel the most effectively implemented action steps were the ELA small group instruction and the ISS at-risk EL instruction. I also think that we did a better job of monitoring our EL aides to make sure they collaborated with teachers to better individualize their plans to meet the needs of EL students. I felt at the end of 07-08 that we needed to do more professional development on differentiated instruction. 2007 action steps for Hispanic and socially economically disadvantaged students helped contribute toward API gains. I feel the action steps that promoted weekly quizzes, makeup quizzes, and EduSoft analysis of quizzes kept teachers focused more on standards and less on curriculum. But ultimately, it was extremely labor-intensive and perhaps not the most efficient way to promote standard-based instruction. I think we got a lot of mileage from continual emphasis on test prep during and after school, as well as the increased tutoring efforts in third grade. Although I think we have done a good job with grade level collaboration, we do a better job of dedicating more time to analyzing student work. 2000 actions for staff development help contribute towards API gains. I feel we effectively use CST scores, AR, STARS program, MIND, blueprints, and test release questions to help influence success of our overall population. I feel we provided the district with some valuable insight that influenced the district benchmarks. I feel we started out strong with the step up to writing, but did not follow through as well as we could have in our second semester. Let's see here. 2,000 actions for targeted intervention helped contribute toward a 41-point EL student gain and a 33-point gain in third grade in API. In the upper grades, I feel that our use of standard-based quizzes was more effective than past intervention instruction. For the primary grades, teacher feedback indicated that reinforcement of fundamental skills would have been more valuable. The use of available tutors in third grade may have also contributed to gains in third grade. 2007 actions for a supportive learning environment helped contribute toward overall API gains. I feel the weekly family reading night was an action step unique to 2007 that effectively brought parents into our school on a regular basis, promoted reading, increased participation in the accelerated reader program, and effectively utilized our library and computer lab after hours. 2007 actions for creating frequent monitoring of learning helped contribute toward overall API gains. Frequent monitoring of learning action steps included a utilization of principal, ISS, and teacher peers, providing specific teacher feedback aimed at improving instruction. The first trimester, we have dedicated staff development time getting more familiar with our grade level standards. We also expect teachers to have a sense of what is taught in other grade levels. We expect our second through fifth grade teachers to have a strong understanding of the key standards in both math and language arts. We have also taken the district goal of identifying essential standards quite seriously and have allowed for articulation as well. In the present trimester and third trimester, professional development will emphasize student writing as well as differentiated instruction. The differentiated instruction will continue to focus on our EL subgroup, although our emphasis on EL subgroups, although our emphasis is on CLs, although our emphasis is on EL, subgroups such as GATE receive special attention. Example, after school enrichment, Saturday Language Arts Day supported by technology. Grade level meetings take place twice a month. Sometimes we meet as a whole and then break out into grade levels depending on the task at hand. A grade level chair is assigned to each grade level. I will often meet with grade level chairs prior to the grade level meeting to discuss meeting objectives and the desired goals for students. Grade level chairs are given an agenda as well as a template to record their minutes. These minutes are a form of written feedback for me. Grade level meeting goals are aligned to our school's professional development plan. Fiscal and human resources are aligned to our professional development plan and ensure CST success. Merced has replaced a number of computers in our lab and in the classroom that have reached the end of their shelf life, purchased software programs that promote academics, employed a computer lab aide, incorporated computer use as part of our after-school program, and is presently exploring the purchase of new technology such as smart boards. Merced has a dedicated staff willing to stay after hours to provide intervention. Standard Plus is incorporated into our intervention as well as into our daily class instruction in selected classrooms. Test prep materials, including Kaplan, Kearney, test prep release questions, and curriculum associates, are purchased and used to prepare for the CST. The AR program is coordinated by a staff member who monitors class implementation, manages the online tests available to all students, as well as the student incentives associated with reading achievement. The roles fulfilled by our ISS and support staff are crucial to our program's success. Based on the analysis of the 07-08 school year action steps, the following 08-09 action steps have been developed. Frequent monitoring of teachers will involve class visits, reflective conferences, written feedback of lessons, and opportunities for teachers to provide each other feedback concerning their instruction. EL students will benefit from continual EL aid instruction based on EL aid and teacher collaboration. The ISS will continue to work with at-risk EL students. The ISS and EL aides help provide self-test prep for the first time. Future staff development will involve differentiated instruction focused on EL students. Socially economically disadvantaged and Hispanic students will benefit from teacher analysis of student work, continual test prep classes, and professional development focused on standard-based instruction. Staff development action steps include meetings that focus on standard-based instruction, essential standards, differentiated instruction, and writing. Targeted intervention this year will focus on our EL students and fifth grade students, since these are our two lowest API groups at present. We provide them with after-school intervention, tutors, cell prep, and professional development that help teachers meet their needs. Key actions related to a supportive learning environment include Family Reading Night, promoting the AR program, and additional parental support for ACES. Student classwork should show evidence of standard-based mastery. Students should be able to articulate lesson objectives and be able to assess their work. Students should be able to tell what is correct about their classwork and what steps they need to take to improve their work. Student numbers in intervention and in special programs should be high. Student test scores should reflect improvement. Staff evidence includes class observation schedules, grade level minutes, professional development evaluations, written feedback from class visits, and certificated and classified evaluations. Parent evidence includes sign-in at meetings, workshops, and school events, number of parent volunteers serving in classrooms, and parent survey feedback. At this point, if you have any questions, I'd be glad to take them.
Jessica, do you have any? Mike?
What's the difference between, when you talk about essential standards, what's the difference between talking about essential standards and talking about SBI, standards-based instruction? What's the difference?
Essential standards is kind of a new emphasis that the district is looking at, where they're looking, there's plenty of standards out there that we have to focus on, right? So what they're saying is there are certain standards that are essential as far as kids having success, and that can be measured in certain ways. But one way of looking at that, Mike, would be the CST. You know, we probably would want to make sure in math and language arts that the standards we're focusing most on are those that are going to be reflected in that test. So that's one. The other thing is, the district's presently working very hard on this, you have the CAESI exam, right? You have 12th grade standards. And so the idea is to get us all focused on certain standards that will eventually get those kids, when they get up to 12th grade, you know, focused on the same standards.
Or 12th grade.
Right. So it would be about, I think we're looking at 10 standards per grade.
Okay. Now, is there a list somewhere that we have with those essential standards?
Yeah, so that's probably.
Is that only going on at Merced?
No, everywhere.
When can we get the list of what we've deemed as the essential standards?
Eventually. Like I say, what's going on right now is the schools are choosing which should be those essential standards based on looking at key standards, based on articulating with other grade levels to see, you know, what's going on in the other grade levels and of that nature. So that's a process that we're presently going through right now. So it seems like they're well along the way. Right now, they had a meeting on Edgenuity training today. The ISS and another a fifth grade teacher from my school went to, and they're going to be coming back to look at what they came up with. We gave them our suggestions. We're going to come back. It's going to go back and forth a few times to make sure whatever we come up with is something that has great buy-in. Any other questions?
Can we get a copy of your presentation?
What's that now?
Can we get a copy of your presentation?
Sure. I can make sure you get one.
And I guess, so you're saying that if I walked into a classroom at Merced and walked over to a student, they'd be able to articulate what their deficiencies were as well as their strong points?
Well, let me give you an example of that. It's a work, obviously, in progress. And so certain students, yes. Certain students, no. And that's what we're kind of working toward. That's what we think should be evidence of our work. An example of how we might do that is, and what we've been trying hard since our professional development is in writing. What I like to be able to do is bring a child up to the and look at the student work and say, okay, tell me what you, they have rubrics, right, that measure how well the students do in writing. And I might say to a student, tell me what your score was. Okay, and they might say, I got a 2. Okay. All right, well, tell me why you got a 2. Tell me what things did you do right to get you a 2. Okay, and they say, well, I was spelling right, I remembered to indent, my sentences dealt with the topic sentence. Great, okay. Tell me what you would need to work on in order to get yourself up to a 3 or 4. Well, I've got to use more adjectives in my writing. I have to write neater, you know, these sort of things. And even in second grade, I can go into rooms and I can have students that have a clear understanding of that. Now, I'd like to see that, you know, with all kids in all grades. Well, that would be an example.
Okay, I understand that. What about if their strong point is in math? Would they be aware of it and what they need to do to continue to develop better?
Right. Well, a similar example might be, let's say, in the area of problem solving. Let's say they they had a test and they were not able to solve certain problems. Can they identify what they need to work on in that area? Do they know that, okay, I'm strong in division, I can do long stuff, I can't do this, that sort of thing? So we do want to try to get the students to articulate more about their own learning. That's the ultimate goal. Yeah.
Okay. Well, and we'll get a copy of the PowerPoint.
I'll make sure. Yeah.
You know, repetition.
We will get a copy.
I'll make sure it works. colored paper, George. Good. I'll make sure. Yeah, okay.
Pink.
Can you give me an example of what you're doing with the English language learners to facilitate their ability to learn English?
Well, here's a couple things. Some of the things that we're noticing with some of our English language learners, first of all, they're identified through a process called the CELT. Okay, and this was
with what?
The CELT test. Okay. It's a test given each year to determine what level they're at. Okay. And sometimes we find that students get stuck at certain levels, not so much because they don't have the oral language to get there, to get to a higher level, but maybe let's say that the testing environment is intimidating for them for whatever reason. They feel uncomfortable. They're not used to. So one thing we tried to do this year, and we think we're going to get our bang for our buck from it. We'll find out because we don't get the results until later in the year. We want to see if by creating the environment that they would have in the test and asking similar questions, obviously not the same questions, but similar questions, prepare them, whether that will cut down on anxiety and perhaps cause us to get better results.
So just increasing test-taking skills?
That's just one example. Another thing that we would do is we have our EL aides work with students from each classroom. We cluster ELs by levels, okay? And what we find is what we try to do is by ability level. In some cases, we may even cross grade level if the students are, you know, if you have a student who's at a very beginning level. And we make sure they get those fundamental ESL skills so that they can, you know, survive in the classroom. It's sometimes not realistic to have them have high level. In fourth grade, if they come from, you know, Mexico and they've just arrived, to ask them to fulfill fourth grade standards is difficult. So what you want to do is make sure they get the basic English skills. If you have to bring it down to phonics, that's what we give them, you know. So that's the idea, and that there's constant communication between the EL aide and teacher to do that. Also, we use our ISS to work with some of the ones that have the most difficulty. We have a retired teacher who comes in and is going to be coming in, actually hasn't started yet, but she's going to be coming in and working with additional EL students that are at risk.
And basically, what kinds of materials are used? Books, you know?
Books, yeah. I mean, we have, you know, Into English. We have other materials. We have English at Your Command. So we have different resources. Sometimes the resource we use is dependent on the particular need of that student. The other thing I should mention is that part of the differentiated instruction that we do, some of the professional development, that gives teachers techniques when they're doing whole group on what things to do to kind of focus on EL students and students who are less likely to maybe speak up in class, to get them to draw them out more, to get them to kind of articulate more. Also, part of that differentiated instruction is having kids work in small groups and having some kids act as models for other kids and getting those EL students to repeat what those models are saying. Okay. Any other questions? Cammie?
You had talked about differentiation, and now we've heard how you've done some of that with the EL. You also talked about the differentiation for the GATE.
Right.
What would that look like?
Well, for GATE, we've done a number of things. We started some after-school enrichment programs, including chess club. We have, what's the other? We had a forgetting, right? Oh, Spelling Bee Club. We give our GATE students, you know, first shot at that so they can be able to do that. We had on a Saturday a special day in the computer lab where students created essays based on first looking at an online presentation and then based on that experience writing up the results. And we had a teacher who was willing to come in and kind of do an extended learning project with those students. We have a meeting each year with the GATE parents where we provide them with ideas and things they can also do to kind of embellish. Of course, there's the Great Escape and some of the things that, you know, the district offers as well.
When you were talking about the EL students, I heard you talking about things that were happening during the school day for those students, how you were differentiating if they needed phonics and they were in fourth grade, they got phonics.
Right.
if a student in fourth grade needed more stimulation during the day, would I be able to walk into a classroom and see that also?
Yes, I think part of the crux of this is goes back again to the emphasis of the district on differentiated instruction. I think the idea is that you want every student to be stimulated to some degree.
Right.
And so a teacher's ability to be able to ask a question that might challenge a certain student in a certain way who might be more capable of taking certain ideas to a higher level, if you will. Also opportunities to give them kind of projects that they can do, you know, outside of the classroom or even within the classroom, extending their classroom assignment, modifying a little bit, maybe modifying even their homework to kind of challenge them a little differently than they might other students, yeah.
Right. You talked about the after-school programs.
Yes.
Who's invited to those programs?
We have a lot of them, and thanks to the district, in part. One of the programs, of course, we've always had a YMCA daycare, which exists before and after school, and that provides for parents that have that need. And that caters also to parents that have to work when
right.
we're out of session. We have the ACES program, of course. We have our ACES program is running well, I feel. We have 100 students involved in that program. They use the computer lab. They use the auditorium. They use the stage. They use some classrooms. And they have both enrichment activities, time to do work on homework with additional help. One of the things that we've introduced is getting parents in there to help out with the homework tutoring. Then in addition to that, we just have some dynamic teachers who have taken on extra clubs. So we have a jogging club, for example. We have a spelling bee club. We have a chess club. We have a choir. And so these are things that teachers have taken on themselves to do because they have a love for that particular special interest, I guess you could say, and are willing to do it with groups of students.
You talked about using the computer. How is that being utilized in your after-school programs?
The one that uses it mainly is the ACES program. As part of their rotation, they go into the computer lab, and they're to be focusing on Orchard. I would kind of compare Orchard to Waterford. Are you familiar with Waterford?
Yes.
Yeah. So I would say Waterford is to OCR curriculum as Orchard is to standards.
Okay.
that makes sense. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Any other?
That's all the questions I have. So it's just the 100 students that have access to the computers
after
school.
To the ACES program, right. Now, we, like I say, offer other programs for kids who want to stay. Now, I should mention, too, we, have after-school intervention for students who need, you know, additional academic help. Yeah.
But any student that wants it can go to YACES, right?
Right, right. But there is a...
So 100 have shown up, but if 300 wanted it, we'd do a program for 300.
Yeah, I think on that, Lily, I think they have a cutoff. They
What's
do have
the cutoff?
A cutoff, depending on the number of the staff they have. I think 100 is the cutoff.
Well, he wants to grow, you know.
Well, is there people on a waiting list?
You know, depending on the grade level, I think there may be some. But, again, they do have the YMCA daycare option. And then, you know, what happens is...
But the ACES, I'm assuming...
Right.
YACES.
Is that it's free.
Yes.
Where the Y, they would have to pay for that.
Because the economics, it's $25 a week now. They have to pay, but it's pretty minimal when you consider the fact they get what they
I
get.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Ruben, did you know that?
Yeah.
That YACES is asking
yes.
for...
They started implementing them last year. It's allowed under the law, but it's supposed to be a very nominal charge per hour, so I'm assuming $25...
It's $25 for the week.
For a whole
week.
Time type of
right.
person. So when you break it down per hour, it's... And at the beginning, they were charging a nominal fee in the agreement that we signed to prevent people from abusing and signing up for hours that they didn't need. So they've always had a nominal thing, but they've implemented it now. I didn't know the amount exactly.
And how many hours a week is that?
That's after school, and so that's offered. The children have to be picked up between 5 and 6. And they're not allowed, actually, even to be picked up earlier than in most cases because they want to make sure that the children in the program are taking advantage of the program since it's government-funded.
You know, I'm really glad I come to board meetings because I find out things here that I wouldn't know otherwise from my own staff.
Jeez.
That's what?
Happens to the board all the time.
Welcome to the club?
Yeah.
Are you saying welcome to the club? Thanks a lot. Okay.
Those parents ask those questions.
Well, I just want to add a couple of things. The state of California publishes what's called blueprints, which show which standards are the most weighted standards on exams that are given by the state. And when you look at those blueprints, you see consistently from the time that a student's tested in second grade all the way up, you see skills that repeat at different levels of learning. And those are what we call essential standards, because we know they're going to be tested again on it, only at a higher level. And so one of the things that we've done as a district is really looked at the amount of standards and what time we're spending in the classroom on which standard. And so we're trying to really perfect the amount of time within a week, within a day, within the school year that we spend on certain standards, because by the nature of the state adopting these standards, they had weighted them. They put more weight to some than others. And so when we do professional development with teachers and conversations, they'll always tell you that there's a whole lot of things that they have to do. And they are always saying that there's not enough time in a day to do all the standards. And so we talked about how you teach all the standards, but how you spend, you know, a week on this one, where on this one you might spend 2 days, and how you differentiate. And so those are the kinds of things. So that was one thing I wanted to say. And the other thing I wanted to say in regards to Mr. Cox's question is that when it comes to EL, there are programs such as Rosetta Stone that are individualized by level. And some of our schools aren't quite there, because what they're doing is they're trying to take the curriculum that they have existing and use that as what's being taught. The other one is supplemental. It can't take the place of what he's already explained that he's doing. So if he were to add that, it would be very helpful, because it would be a support, but it can't be in place of what he's explained that he has to do. So basically, I am very proud of the fact that this school has done an exceptional job of reaching the goal and surpassing the goal. And they've done that now for several years in a row in terms of the 800. One of the things that they also know is how hard it is to sustain and move in the right direction constantly, because we've had the conversation about perfecting which classroom, which students is what's going to get you. After you get to 800, if you want to move them up above, it's no longer a systemic effort. It's now getting more and more fine-tuned and individualized. And they have some very good meetings that I've attended, and they have some very good leadership. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
I have one more quick question. In lieu of that, there's a charge for this program. For students who don't attend the after-school program, is there a way they can have access to the computers and their parents not have to pay a fee?
One use of it is that I mentioned we have these family reading nights. Now, this is based on the Accelerated Reader program, and I don't know how familiar you are with that particular program, but they have the computer use afterwards. So what happens is, after our students read in the library, then they go right over to the computer lab, and they take a test, and they get on there, and then if they want to do other things on the computer, we have a teacher in there that can assist. So each week, they can't have that opportunity between 5 and 7 on Wednesday nights.
Okay.
It's been fairly well attended, I'd say. It varies anywhere from 30 to 50 families.
Thank you. I appreciate your... Was there anyone you wanted to introduce?
Gary next?
Will, should I introduce you?
No. Well, okay. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. Thank you very much.
I noticed that Mr. Hunter's here, and he's brought his children. So if they would like to stay longer, they can. But we're going to move him up right now, so he'd have the opportunity to leave if he would like. We just want to say how much we appreciate Gary and all he's done for the district in his years of service. When we went for the bond, what we found out was really important was how the facilities look to the community, even for individuals that didn't have children. And one of the things that Gary did, even when we were going for the bond, people really liked the way our schools looked. And then since then, they're so proud. But without it looking good before we went for the bond, I don't think they would have been as receptive. So we just appreciate you so much, Gary, for making the community proud of our facilities, because they're their facilities. And you made them shine. Thank you so much. And we have
a plaque.
for you. It says, Gary Hunter, thank you for your service as an outstanding West Covina Unified School District employee and a CSEA president. And that's what I didn't mention. You've really built a great relationship with your association and our administration and school board, and we appreciated working, or those of you who worked with you on the contracts, I know really appreciated how you could bring your union together and with great outcomes. So thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Leaving this district was not an easy decision to make, but I have three great reasons that came with me this evening. That's Joshua, Emily, Caitlin, and my wife.
Don't give up your day
job. For some of those that know, I've moved on. I'm now working with the Disneyland Resort. I'm over their horticulture department in projects, so it's a good challenge. It's going to be a real healthy challenge for me. But more or less, 14 years as being president to the chapter. We've had a lot of good times, Mike.
Yeah.
And we've had a lot of challenging times,
Mike.
And the administration has changed. But one thing that I've always been able to just make sure that everybody knows, there's two things you never compromise, your dignity and your respect. No matter how bad it is financially from the state or what the challenges are within the district at that particular time, you always know that you don't walk away from that table compromising the respect and the dignity of the people that you negotiate with. And for all of you, I thank you very much. It will be very challenging in the next couple of years, I would assume, but I'm sure under the new direction of your leadership, your new president will be Vaughn. Vaughn. And some of his executive board is here this evening, as well as Sandy Chadbourne. Lee is here as well. And on the negotiating team that will keep things going in the positive direction that we've gone all the time will be Pam Rosenthal this year. Thank you very much again. I really appreciate it. And best of luck to everybody.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Thank
you. Before you leave, Mike would like to say something.
Some of the board members.
Well, I did notice at Disneyland this last week, and there were some things that were dying. but I'm, you know, I'll save that for the next time. But you know, I guess, you know, Gary, I finally outlasted you. But you know, the one thing, you know, and of course we always dealt with two associations, and the one thing that made you stand apart from the other one, and no offense to the current president, was that you always kept your word. Whenever we were negotiating, and you always, you know, we went through two sets of, you know, really hard times, and although you managed to avoid probably the mother of all hard times, but perhaps, maybe the bankruptcy was probably worse, but, you know, you always tried to protect the jobs of your members. And, you know, I don't think sometimes they knew what you were going through to try to protect their jobs. And, you know, I really, you know, don't think some of them actually realize that they're still working because of the way you negotiated under very difficult circumstances. And that's something that you can always take with you now that you've gone over to corporate greed. Over at so, but I wish you well there and enjoyed working with you here in the district.
Steve also had something he'd like to say.
Gary, over the last 15 years that I've been on the board, Now, is this being recorded?
Yeah.
Yes.
It is?
I
actually cannot think of any single employee in this district that has had a greater impact on the district as a whole, employees and students. A tremendous person. We are losing somebody extremely strong. Mike said a lot. I mean, we have interactions on a personal level that are, you know, not necessarily public and you know, they're confidential-ish and that sort of things. And the discussions that we had, especially early on when, you know, when I started back in 93, 94, 95, coming out of the bankruptcy and you were part of that and giving us guidance as to where we can go with, you know, some of the latitude and things that we had. And, you know, it's just truly a joy and an honor. And I think one of the finest moments in the district was that opportunity to make sure that you got that ditch digger. And we didn't have to use that shovel anymore. You know, I mean, this district moved forward. We came into the 21st century and by doing that, everything's just coming up roses and flowers, and it's just wonderful. You know, I trust that the kids will have lifetime passes to Disneyland, and you're the hero now, and that, and, you know, maybe your hours are going to be a little bit better, who knows, but again, tremendous, and thank you so much for all you've done for the district.
Thank you very much.
Can I just echo our appreciation on behalf of the administration and teachers of the district? I was warned by the district and told that this was a different type of negotiation in terms of the inner relationships between our teachers' association and our CSEA. And my past history taught me that a lot of the times I couldn't move one without the other. And I think what I would echo is that you always had great timing. You never went back on your word when you said that you were going to do something. You were absolutely fantastic in convincing those that have to follow you that that was the best decision. Oftentimes when you lead people, you may have the right idea of what you want to do, but when you go back, they're not in agreement. But you always made sure that you were aligned with their thinking, and so when you made a deal, it was a deal that your membership voted for without, you know, having to come back to the table. So I thank you for that. In addition to that, I want you to know that everywhere I went, Gary was doing a different job. Mm-hmm. He was either on a tractor pulling down a fence, or he was digging up a tree, or Stuart had him doing some modernization, or Grace had him doing something. And I thought, what is this guy's classification? I mean, he just did just about anything that it took. In fact, one day we found him on the roof. And that day in particular, an inspector was here and said, what is that guy doing on the roof? So I want you to know that he treated this place as if it were his home, and he took pride in everything that he did. And I want to thank you for that and wish you the best. Thank you.
Now we'll move on to Vine.
Good evening, Madam President, board members, Madam Superintendent, district staff, and guests. My name is William Bertrand, and I am the principal of Vine Elementary School. We're very proud to have been named a 2008 No Child Left Behind Blue Ribbon School and a high-achieving Title I school, and yet, with a loss of 11 API points, we know we have to pull ourselves up by the bootstraps and get down to work. We are committed to serve our community of learners, and I am here tonight to convey to you our student achievement plan. We begin with an analysis of Vine data. We currently have an API of 844, which was a drop of 11 points. We did meet the district target, both school-wide and for our significant subgroups, and we've set a goal for this year to recoup those 11 points and add at least 10 additional points to our API score. We're determined to get to 900. Fifth grade had a drop in both AYP and API, which gave us our biggest hit. They fell 13 points in the number of students scoring proficient and advanced in language arts, and 12 points in math. Fifth graders scored poorly in reading comprehension on the English language arts section of the CST and operations with fractions and decimals on the math section. While fourth grade made some gains, second and especially third grade remained virtually flat. Our school-wide English language arts and math AYP, that's that percentage of students scoring proficient and advanced, decreased slightly, and while we did make the 08 targets, we're not pleased with our results. In looking back at last year's action steps, we begin with professional learning communities. Now, this term describes a collegial group of educators united in their commitment to student learning who share a vision, work and learn collaboratively, and focus on accomplishing together what they cannot accomplish alone. We call them PLCs, and our PLCs are at different points along the continuum toward full implementation. Our kindergarten and first grade PLCs are our strongest. They plan, review data, share successes and failures and lessons, and discuss student success. Our second and fourth grade PLCs have made great progress. Both these groups have different makeups due to reassignment of personnel and are more cohesive groups this year. I've targeted the third and fifth grade PLCs this year because of third grade's lack of progress on the CST and, of course, fifth grade because of their significant drop in score. Last year, I also talked with you about our book study of Mike Schmoker's Results Now. We learned a lot of really useful strategies, but implementation of those strategies hasn't taken a hold across the grade levels. We continue to struggle with, but are making progress toward, focusing on the common curriculum, really analyzing and faithfully following the district pacing guides. We also have trouble with engaging all students, differentiating instruction to meet the needs of all students. Now, we've had greater success, with articulating what students are learning each day, not only posting standards on the board or learning objectives, but really referencing those standards throughout the lesson and throughout the day. And also, teachers really talking with their PLC partners and determining what students need to know as opposed to what's nice to know, and then eliminating that nice-to-know unit from their teaching. To ensure that we are focused on improving student achievement, our professional development this year is focused on examining our teaching and students' learning. We've spent time reviewing the standards and unwrapping them, really looking to see what they ask of our students. We've read and discussed articles centered on standards-based instruction and student assessment. We reviewed the CST data to determine our areas of concern, and we've practiced strategies to get to know our students well and build communities in our classrooms. Teachers have received training in the new science curriculum, Standards Plus program, and the Orchard program. We have examined our practices with regard to special education students and learned ways to work with both the students and their parents. We are learning how to differentiate instruction to meet the needs of all our students, including our GATE population and English learners. As we continue throughout the year, we will be learning strategies for strengthening comprehension, continuing to revisit differentiated instruction, and creating common assessments. Grade level meetings offer us the opportunities to build on what we have learned and discovered at professional development sessions. Teachers are working to strengthen the alignment of activities to the standards. They've created ways to get to know their students well so they can plan lessons and activities accordingly. We took time earlier in the year to identify those essential or power standards you heard about before, and we recently revisited those power standards as part of the district focus to identify essential standards for each grade level. Teachers have worked to make vertical connections between the essential standards that they have identified. They're also designing lessons to support mastery of identified standards and creating action plans for assisting our under-supported students. Our fifth grade team has examined reading comprehension strategies and planned activities to strengthen student understanding of both fractions and decimals. To ensure teachers have what they need to successfully focus on improved student achievement, I'm using my fiscal and human resources to assist them in their efforts. My instructional support specialist offers assistance to teachers via model lessons, informal observations of lessons, providing and reviewing current data, and working with under-supported students. I budget funds for a Title I instructional aide who assists under-supported students at various grade levels. We provide enrichment classes after school for our GATE students. I've drawn from my lottery and discretionary funds to purchase Standards Plus material, which not only help the students build skills, but provide invaluable test-taking strategies, and really importantly in my book, allow for deeper understanding of the standards by the teachers. In addition, I'm working with Mr. Morantes at Coronado to establish a service learning opportunity for his students in which they would come to Vine to assist our underperforming students. So let's take a look at our action steps. What are we going to do? Early in the year, I met with the individual teachers to review this year's rosters and the students' CST results and to establish implementation plans. I purchased Standards Align materials, Standards Plus and Orchard, which the teachers are using to assist students. Working with my leadership team in ISS, we created goals for this school year, including regaining those 11 points we lost and being a standards-focused school. We also restructured our mornings, cutting our morning assembly from 5 days to 2 days a week, and moving all assemblies, including student of the month and grade level performances, to the afternoons. Teachers are implementing the Results Now strategies, and my ISS and I monitor that implementation. Working with the ISS, teachers have created and implemented interventions. My leadership representatives in each PLC are leading their groups through the process to establish a mission and goals. What are we really trying to do for our students? And I'm working to establish that cross-age tutoring program with Coronado School. So how will we know if what we're doing is successful? Well, some of the measurements we will rely on include district walkthroughs. The district staff have been very helpful in visiting our school and walking through classrooms to offer us feedback regarding our actions. Our PD and grade-level PLC meeting agendas serve as evidence of our efforts. At the conclusion of each grade-level PLC, the leadership representative returns to me an overview of the meeting that includes action steps. As PLCs work with under-supported students offering intervention, they collect data via pre- and post-assessments, which give us indicators of our success. And our benchmark data also serves in a similar fashion, helping us to see how our students are mastering the standards being taught. Hopefully, we will have assessment data next year that will show our efforts to move toward 900 has been successful. And in addition, students and parents offer their feedback in a variety of ways through the student work and through frank comments that students and teachers make saying what's working and what's not, and we appreciate those comments. So we understand that the task before us is formidable. We not only have our own reputations at stake, but we have our students' futures as well. So I thank you for your time, and I would welcome questions that you might have.
Yes, Mike.
You mentioned power standards, and then you mentioned essential standards. So what's the difference between a power standard and an essential standard?
Just the name. When we started,
you said you looked at power standards and developed essential standards. That to me implies they're different.
It shouldn't be different. If I implied such, it was a mistake. When we started, we called them power standards. That's a term that's been thrown around for a while.
Okay.
The district is now, and the state is referring to them as essential standards.
Okay.
It's those standards, as Dr. Castillo and Mr. Fitzer mentioned earlier, where we're really looking at leverage. Does it help the student progress from grade to grade to grade? Is it going to help them? Do they need that standard to understand another standard?
Right. Well, I just want to make sure that I understand exactly what words you're using, since you keep changing them on me.
Sorry.
But, on your tutoring program, how does having a student, when you look at the population of Coronado, there are some exceptions to this, but you either have students that aren't making grade level and making the credits and aren't performing, and or you also have students that have disciplinary issues. How do you work that into a cross-age tutoring with elementary students?
Well, I'm hoping that Mr. Morantes will help us at that point determine which students would be the proper students to come down and work with our students at Vine. I think we need to offer those students the opportunity to show how they can shine, the students at Coronado. I think some of them are there for a variety of reasons. It's not necessarily that...
those are two of the big ones.
Those are two of the big ones, and there's no doubt about that. But with proximity and with a willingness on Mr. Morantes' part, that's the avenue that I'm pursuing. I started with trying to work something out with West Covina High School, and that fell through, unfortunately, and so I'm moving down the line.
So are we going to ask parents to sign off on that arrangement?
We are not to that point yet, but that's not a bad idea to have the parents sign off that their child will be tutored by a student from Coronado. Thanks. It's a good idea.
Mr. Morantes says that he has about a dozen students who, if you look at the work that they do and their ability level, that they're exceptional kids.
Mm-hmm.
And he says that several times, they have asked if they can perform some kind of service. And he has been exploring the idea of, what time of day, since they get out early, when they would go over there and who it would be and what kind of contract. But it's a conversation, really, that both, William and Mr. Morantes have said, it's really interesting because the dozen students that they're talking about are kids that probably you wouldn't mind tutoring your student if you understood the situation, right, on the one hand. On the other hand, we have some kids already in several programs. Well, your school doesn't qualify for YACES, right?
No, we do not.
So his is the only school that doesn't really offer.
They're not charging kids.
So he doesn't. No, he doesn't get to charge. Only Ruben charges. No. so basically, we've been trying to figure out at his school if we have some teachers doing supplemental, but not enough. I would tell you that his biggest challenge is impressing the need for change that has to come from the teaching. Because oftentimes in professional development, our teachers will say that it's the kinds of kids that are at Vine Street Elementary. And that, I'm sorry, Vine Elementary. And that's just not acceptable. And so we've been working very closely together to make those changes. Now, also, he has followed a beloved principal. Jackie Brown was a principal who was very connected to all the teachers at that school, and changes are very difficult at that school. And so we have been working very closely with some of the leadership at the school to empower them to help us make the changes, but it is a difficult task that he has. And as I have said to him, that school has always represented one of the best result schools that we have had. And I don't care what kind of students. Now, you know, he's grown in enrollment quite a bit. It's one of the schools in the district that, you know, we have no problems. Now we're up to how many kindergarten classes?
We have 4 kindergarten classes.
And first grade?
4 first grade. Well, 4.5. 4.5 second, 5 third, 4 fourth, and 3 fifth.
Yeah, and I think when I started here, we had 2 kindergarten classes. So the thing that we've done differently is, yes, you have to accept kids. Even though you are Vine Elementary School, you have to accept kids. Yes, we have to teach all kids that come to our door to high standards. And yes, even teachers and superintendents can learn how to do things better. And so we've embarked upon that, and it's been a very interesting challenge for William, but he's up to the task, and I do expect him to meet his goal. Thank you.
Wait a minute. You know, I'm just stunned by what I hear is this sort of classism and elitism that I'm hearing in some of these.
Oh, you've never heard that before.
And that, so
never heard it
before. I'm just truly stunned. I'm just curious on how long and how did it happen that nice to know items got into our curriculum and are being taught.
Quite frankly, that's been happening for a long time. You know, yeah. Teachers have their pet units. Uh-huh. Dinosaurs is a pet unit. The rainforest is a pet unit. But when you say to a teacher, a first grade group of teachers, show me in the standards where we spend 6 weeks on the rainforest, they can't show it to you.
Uh-huh.
That's nice to know, but they don't need to know. They need to know that the rainforest is a habitat, and we need to move on.
He's tough. Run a thin line there, my friend. Oh, my goodness sakes alive. Okay, you have had the luxury of having been in the audience when I asked this question to Borden, and as it was so eloquently supplanted by our superintendent, but can you explain what you perhaps do differently with respect to reaching English learners?
You know, we don't have a large population of English learners, but we do have some. We have 65 students, which is roughly 12% of our population, 65. What we did this year was I clustered my English learners, so I only had no more than two ELD levels in a classroom. You have your beginning intermediate, early intermediate, immediate, early advanced. You have 5 different levels. So we try and get no more than 2 in a classroom. That frees up the teacher a little bit. You don't have to worry about an advanced student and a beginning student.
Oh.
Very different levels. So I clustered those. We provided, with assistance from the district, the Avenues program, which is from Hampton Brown. It's a textbook-driven English language development program. We use SDI strategies, specially designed academic instruction in English, which involves realia. We're talking about a bear, and I have a picture of a bear, or I have a stuffed bear that the teachers are using so that the students can assimilate they can associate what they're seeing with the word. Something else that I think has been really beneficial, and it's in a large part due to your efforts, our arts program that we have going on now. Music is a fantastic way to reach and help our English learners. So when we have the music teacher there providing lessons that the teachers can then go back in their classrooms and use as well, is a great way to help build vocabulary for kids who are learning English.
All right, thanks.
George. Sadai.
Oh, I know what that is.
Yes, she did. Okay, just one thing. EL also has standards that are tested. There are standards that have to be taught. And so when you look at programs, you try to find the programs that are best aligned, and that seemed to be one of the better programs.
I was curious. You mentioned essential standards are being viewed at the state level.
The state identified essential standards for math, but not English language arts or science or history, social science. And Mr. Fitzer mentioned earlier that the instructional support specialists and teachers from each of the schools were here working today to establish those essential standards in all areas. Each school site put together their list by grade level of essential standards, standards they deemed essential. And then today the task was to take a look at all of the data from all the schools and come to consensus over what we can use as essential standards. And then I believe the task then is to move forward by putting together pacing guides and benchmarks that will be in alignment with those essential standards.
So are you communicating to us that the state's even capitulating that some of these standards came out of a committee and are superfluous to what the child needs? Or are we just saying that we're finding them superfluous in addressing it?
I don't think either. I think what the state is saying is there are standards where we need to go deeper and standards where we can go broader. So these essential standards are where you go deep, and as Dr. Castillo said earlier, you really spend a lot additional time on these essential standards because they're a building block for these other standards that you can hit with less time.
Okay. And you say that if something fell through with Coronado...
Nothing's fallen through. With Coronado is whom I'm working with right now. I had approached West Covina High School, and that didn't.
It fell through the high school.
Somebody coming over. Why did that fall through?
I was told that at this point there's no service learning requirement for the high school, and it wasn't something that we could put into fruition this year.
You know, this year.
Maybe in the future we could.
Is that to say that the teachers aren't able to generate the idea of a service from the students?
You know what? I don't have that information with me. That was in working with the high school. That was where we kind of stopped.
And you mentioned there's difficulty in forming some learning communities. What are the difficulties?
I'm sorry, difficulties in what?
In forming your learning communities.
Difficulties with our professional learning communities. Not with informing them. Some of my professional learning communities are working better than others. Some are right where I want them. Others are getting there. I mentioned the personnel changes. There's a book called Good to Great that's by Jim Collins that talks about having the right people in the right seat on the bus. And it's something like the Dr. Castillo was mentioning earlier. I'm trying to get all the right people in the right seats on the bus so that they can work cohesively as a community.
Well, are the teachers responding in the same attitude?
In the same attitude, going along with what I'm doing? Absolutely.
Let me explain where I came from. In my previous career, if you could not go in working in your career unless you had an attitude that you wanted to work together, and if you didn't, you didn't stay. Are we saying, are our teachers have the same attitude, or are they saying, we won't work until we're in the right seat?
No, I'm saying a bulk of our teachers have that right attitude, that we're here to help kids, we're going to do whatever it takes. Quite frankly, though, there are some teachers who would like to go into their classrooms and close the door and be done with it and not collaborate with their colleagues, and that's what I'm working on changing.
How?
By requiring it. I mean, basically, two Wednesdays a month, they have to do it.
But professional learning communities are also on a wide variety of levels. It's the grade levels. It's the whole staff working as a professional learning community. It's my leadership team working as a professional learning community, working together. And that's what I'm pushing, and that's what the teachers are coming on board with. And you know, those who aren't, we have conversations about how we work together to benefit all of our students.
And you mentioned development and professional development, how to improve instruction. Two parts. How are you targeting that, or what are you targeting, and how are you getting accepted?
We're targeting, you know, again, it depends on the grade level. Differentiated instruction is a big topic, because if you don't differentiate for your various learners, you're teaching at one level. So I'm really working hard with differentiation so that all my teachers can teach all the students and meet all the needs of all the students in their classroom. In addition to that, though, we really have to take a look at where, like, our fifth graders fell down with fractions and decimals, and how are we going to teach that, and how can we rearrange the schedule? Do we need to teach fractions and decimals earlier? Was it just a matter of teaching it late in the year last year, and that's why the students didn't do so well? We really have to analyze what we did. Third grade, third, fourth, and fifth, a lot of the items on the CST are inferential questions, and if we don't teach them to infer and interpret information, we're doing them a great disservice. So we're looking at how we can teach inferences as well.
Okay. What after-school programs do you offer?
We offer, for our GATE students, we offer enrichment programs. We offer choir for all students, third through fifth grade. We offer a track team for third through fifth grade students as well. We were going to be offering an intervention after school for our bubble kids, those kids who are currently at the basic level, but we want to push up to proficient. In the past, we had a performing arts a drama club. We lost that teacher, and we're trying to put one of those back together.
And do they have access to the computers now after school? And it sounds like the bubble students will when you bring that in.
Bubble students will. We provide a before-school computer club via our library where students can sign up for that. That's always very popular, and we do several sessions of those. So we get a group of students in for 6 weeks and out, and then we start another group of students for 6 weeks.
I'm only asking your elementary school this because I just happened to go with four of your students to Knox Berry Farm. And they, the two subjects they said they didn't like were social studies and science. And I know we just adopted the new science books, and they are wonderful books.
Most people don't like social studies teachers. I just want you to know we have one in the audience, and it's not uncommon.
Well,
And so I'm just wondering how especially with since we've adopted the new books, that they look like they're very engaging, how they're being used in the classroom, and is the classroom set up in such a way that, do you have the materials you need to actually implement everything that's in those books?
We do, and I agree with you. I think the new science curriculum looks fantastic. My teachers are very excited about it. It's been slow in coming, to be honest with you. It's coming in bits and pieces. I just received some boxes last week that are some more of the kits. So we now, I believe, have everything we need so students can start the investigations and experiments, and that's going to change a lot of attitudes regarding science. Social studies, if I may be frank, is a different ball of wax altogether. In looking at the social studies curriculum, it's very limited. Now they have a great online resource, a great DVD. In our fourth and fifth grade classes, we have LCD projectors mounted, such as this one. We tap into this teacher's computer. We can use those. We can access the websites. It's coming for third grade. First, kinder, and second. Let's share the LCD projector, plug it in, and share it. Teachers are responsible for finding a lot of supplemental materials to do that. But we're looking at some very inventive ways that we can make social studies more enjoyable for our kids.
Great. I appreciate you sharing that with me. And overall, they love the school.
So it's a great school.
I had to twist their arm to say, well, is there something you can improve? Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Report of action taken in closed session. The following action was taken and it's being reported. It needs to be reported by law. It was moved by George Fuller, and seconded by Jessica Shoemaker to readmit students 140009, 155017, 135131, 190155, 140351, 184514, 174724. The vote was unanimous to readmit these students. Is there any reports that any board member would like to make? The student board member's report?
Okay, so finals will be taking place next week, and in preparation of them, we're going to be having Cocoa Jam this week, which is an after-school program where students can go into the cafeteria and they're given free snacks and they can study for their finals. Volunteer time to go help them. If they have any questions on math or like history or anything, they can go there and receive help.
And is that free?
Yeah. Okay.
Right now.
Not everything's free. No, oh, sorry.
Okay, no, but I meant in the program. Like, the
yes, I was teasing.
Okay. On Monday, we had 24 teachers assist a teacher ingenuity program. And from what I heard personally, it was really, like, the information was really refreshing, and it was innovative. So I heard they really liked it. And that it was one of the best, like, teacher ingenuity programs that many of us have seen in a long time. And our school recycling program has been growing like constantly but slowly since last year since it started, and we recently got 12 new bins after like to our campus, and some of them are in our quad, some of them are in our gym in the cafeteria, and these are just in our goal to make our school more environmentally sustainable. So, and like the program itself is self-sustaining because we earn funds from recycling, and those go back to buying new bins and improving the program itself. And also, we have really big games coming up. This Thursday, we have the wrestling match against South Wales. All right. And Friday, we have a basketball game against Roland. Winter formal is next Saturday, and this Thursday will be the court fashion show in our quad. And next Thursday are our elections. And that's my report. Does anybody have any questions?
No, thank you.
Thank you.
I did want to mention when they were talking about service at the high school, I know that they might not have a component where they have to do service learning, but there is many of the students are involved in clubs that do community service without credit, which I think is wonderful that they're stepping out on their own and doing all of that service. So since we did have the question of why the high school couldn't go over it, maybe it was just a timing issue, but I know the students always step up to the plate and have come through on so many occasions with their service learning.
Thank you.
And thank you for your report. I do not have any blue cards in front of me at this time. Was there anyone who needed to address the board? Seeing nobody, we will move on to the organizational part of our meeting. Is there anything anybody would like to take off of consent?
Five.
Nine.
And six.
Five, six, and nine have been requested to be removed. Is there a motion? Is there a second?
A second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. George, you took off number five.
Right. The first thing, I have a couple of questions. Number one, my understanding, is this correct? There's no child listed here that's 18 or older that was asking for a waiver on?
That's correct.
That's correct. But it's, and the second question is, we're moving on modifications. I only bring that up because the word accommodations appears on the front page. So we're only bringing in students with modified.
George makes a good point. He's differentiating between what has to come to board. What has to come to board are any modifications when the exam is given. And in the transmittal, they use kind of boilerplate language that kind of lists both, which in this case really is not the case. The things that will be brought to you have to do with modifications. So I thought that was a good observation that caught us sort of in rethinking why we use that boilerplate. But thank you, George. Appreciate that.
Thank you. Discussion. I think it's important to understand it's the modifications only. And I was concerned. I believe that no student who has met the requirements for graduation, which if they provide accommodations to pass the CASE, which means only that they may get a room to themselves or extra time, but they pass the content, should ever have to worry about having their diploma reviewed by a board. If they've met the state requirements and they've earned it, and we should not be up here at the board reviewing. Modifications is a different story. We're altering the test. We are altering the test. The state's not taking the responsibility, and we need to move on it. When saying that, I'll move the item.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Mr. Spence, you took off number 6?
I did. At our last board meeting, or the meeting before that, we had a great discussion about where we were with SELPA and our negotiations, et cetera. And I just wanted to know, this goes through 2010, where we are with that, and as far as the extension of this local agreement.
One of the things that the superintendents discussed at the superintendents council is that if any existing partner in our SELPA wants to break away in any way, you have to give a year's notice. So because of that, we needed the next 6 months to decide whether we're staying with the Los Angeles County of Education as the administrator of our funds, A, and B, if any of the services that are provided by the county, if there were any school districts or any other agencies that would want to take that responsibility. Right now, we're in an investigatory manner in looking at how the SELPA uses the money and how many districts are involved in terms of using an amount of money. For example, we know that we have 100 students that need a specialized program. I ask the questions, what do other districts in the SELPA have? What percentage of students do they have, and how much do they contribute? So what we're trying to do is really narrow down what are the programs that are being funded and how much money is being spent for each program, and then look at, is that the best use of the money? Is there an alternative? And the county superintendent is aware that this is a transition time in which we are exploring the services provided by the county as one of the partners that has to sign off. But for the SELPA to continue to work in the next 6 months while we do this investigation, there needed to be a board action by each of the districts in the SELPA in order to continue sort of status quo for this year. And we said, well, absent all this information, we have no other recourse than to do that because transition will take a lot longer than that. So our goal is that in June of this year, we would come back to our boards of education as superintendents with an outline of number of students from what district and what programs for what cost, what the SELPA office uses to operate the SELPA office, what the county uses to be the fiscal agent, and any recommendations that might be brought by those superintendents have to be voted by each of the board members. So the reason it goes out to 2010 is that that would then, in June, put the county or anybody else on notice that in a year's time is when changes would take place, a plan B. But we haven't developed plan B yet.
Okay. Has anyone given a year's notice?
Pomona has given a year's notice. Our SELPA tried to give the county information that they would have a year's notice, but the superintendents decided we cannot give that county that notice until we know if we could provide those a better way.
Okay, so the superintendents decided that's not something that's written into our agreement then. That's a verbal agreement among you guys talking? Or is that written down? Because you say the superintendents decided that we had a year before we could get out. So my question is, Is that because that's in a document, or is that because the superintendents got together and decided?
No. There is a requirement. There's a requirement that we give a year's notice. And even 6 months of trying to get information from a director that's no longer there, with a new director, with a county office personnel who is reluctant to share information, we felt like that's a pretty fast going. But if a year's notice is required, then we needed to get that done, and so we have to carry this out to 2010.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions on this item?
I'll move.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Passes unanimously. Mr. Spence, you took off item 9.
Yeah, because I would like to move for approval with the deletion of the PO number 0902450, which is located on page E.
Are you moving it?
I'll move it without it, yeah.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
What was the number again?
0902450.
I move that we accept 092450.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
It passes 4-1 with Mike being the no vote.
I didn't get to say that I'm voting against this because on at least 3 different occasions I think we received incomplete legal advice from our counsel.
And I would like to add to that that we are approving an invoice submitted from our attorney for services rendered, and I would like in the future to hear the reason why a specific invoice is not worth agreeing to, what the disagreement on the stated
invoice
great. Is.
I would love to do that. If the district will provide me the copies of the invoice, I'll be happy to speak about it at length.
Sounds like that would be an interesting topic. Number 12, the audit report.
Nine. I'm sorry.
Okay. On the audit report, as you know, each year we bring to you the results of an audit. At this time, we're bringing to you the results of our latest 2007-2008 audit report. And I'm pleased again to let you know that there were no findings in terms of our record keeping, our practices, and our implementation in terms of how we keep our books and how we transfer money, cash flow, et cetera, in this audit report. And I would like Mr. Frutos to give you a little bit of information about that.
Thank you. Last year, I asked the board when we did our presentation of our audit to be a little lenient with us this year because we didn't think we could repeat. I'm going to ask the same thing for next year.
Here
we worked very hard through the direction of the superintendent to manage 2 areas of particular concern. As you know, the state has moved through the IRS a significant amount of increased scrutiny for our payroll systems, and we were a little bit concerned that there might be something there. We did very well. The auditor didn't find a single inappropriate thing, whether it was the counting of hours coming from HR or our own payroll system. The other one was the way that we do federal compliance with some of our insurances. Again, changes in the law have changed the way we do confidentiality and all that, and we were, again, very concerned that this year we might find that we had a challenge with one of our records or something like that. And I have to commend John Moss, our director of fiscal, and everybody that worked in our payroll department and the data that we got, again, from human resources and from other departments, because there wasn't a single finding, even though they had 23 checks this year as opposed to the 17 from last year. Aside from that, the rest of the audit was similar to last year, and we're very pleased that we have this result. Thank you.
Questions for Mr. Frutos?
I have one thing, which just is, usually when you get clean audits like this, especially 2 years in a row, they're either really good or we're about to go bankrupt, and the auditors, skip stuff. That's when you look out in the business world, a lot of these companies that have gone bankrupt all had clean slates from their, from their auditors, and there's been other districts in the past that have had clean slates from their auditors, and then next thing you know, there's problems. And so I don't know how do we, you know, I don't know, perfection's kind of a tough thing to evaluate, and I'm just trying to figure out how you can get a handle around perfection. You know, every year, no findings. Can you mess up once just to test the auditors to see if they're actually doing their job, or, you know, I mean, I guess, I don't know.
Well, I think the process is part of the reason. As the auditors are here, they're asking questions and they're double checking, right? So sometimes they'll meet with me, sometimes they'll meet with a school, sometimes they'll meet with somebody doing student body funds, somebody, you know, they'll do payroll, they'll do whatever. But if they have a question, you know, if they see something that they think, you know, I'm not sure, then we have to, at that point, address it, explain it, and prove it. Okay. Right. So they give us the opportunity, when they see something that they're not sure about, to say, you know, I'm not sure about this, Mr. Frutos, can you explain this? And then if Ruben is able to satisfy them in terms of the standard that they hold us to, then, you know, they'll give them the good. If they don't, then they'll cite us.
Now, is that something different than NIGRO, working with NIGRO, than it did previous auditors? Or
if I may address that, the standards are the same every year for three areas, financial reporting, and you actually said something that actually occurs. They do test runs of what we call zero numbers. Mm-hmm. We do a test run. What if this happened? Could the system be wrong that it's saying that everything's valid, but it's not? And this year we did a couple, and they came back. Okay. The second thing they tested, anything related with hiring and salaries. There's a sequence of events between an employee, the stream of income that they get, and then taxation, et cetera. But the one thing that has changed in the last couple of years is insurance payments and the amounts that the Board of Education or the superintendent designate for post-employment benefits and things like that, which can have an agency go south very quickly. So what we do have is, I think, a system in our budgeting that has been balanced over the last couple of years. And this year, the test that they gave us were able to be addressed without having to go back and revisit, which is good.
Well, it was a challenge for you to get another unqualified, because you were real hesitant last year. So I'm becoming more confident that it'll happen, that it'll be a three-peat. No pressure.
As a balance.
Jessica has moved this item.
No.
Is there a second?
I'll second to receive it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? It passes unanimously. Okay. Any further board discussion?
Yes.
George.
First, I've supported the teachers the time that I've been on. I stand behind their teachers, and I think it's there. It's disturbing, though. It's the second time this year that I've heard a report where teachers were not accepting our program. There was an incident last year at another school where the program was found not to be implemented, which affected API. And now I'm hearing stories of difficulty in implementing collaboration and things of this nature. We have a process where we go through, I know that we do, where we search out and try to find out what teachers are there, and then we make a decision. But once that decision is made, we are paying a very good salaries to people to implement that. And to have Mavericks and Lone Rangers not buying in only affects students. And it's not acceptable to me. It's not acceptable to me. You know, if we're a team now and you don't want to be a team, I know Alpine County hires. And, you know, you could probably just be there and never see a principal for a while. I don't want to be flippant, but there's places. But if we're a team, I expect collaboration. I expect people to work together and form a community. If you're going to take our money, then that's what we need to do after the process has gone through. if you don't like the process of what's going on, we have a mechanism to address it. But as long as it's in place, it's disturbing. It's the second time. It's disturbing, too. Yes, I know service projects go in, but, you know, I'm big on service. I've worked in the public sector since I was 18 years old, except for a year. It wasn't exciting. And I had my own business for a while. So it wasn't exciting. So if you're looking for my values and where I'm coming from, I think it's important we incorporate service, and I really hope the high school is helping to build that atmosphere. I expect leadership from the staff to do that, that we are producing productive citizens that can take care of themselves but also be of service. So I'm looking there. So couple more mundane things. I'd like to know if we could be provided the number of waivers that we've been granted so far this year on terms of modification that we've granted so far this year for this graduation coming up. If we could send that out. It doesn't have to be here, just in the transmittals that we get. And yes, I'm caught my interest when I did a quick calculation that ACES is at Merced is $90,000 a year. I'd like to know how that came about and how that money, why that money was necessary and how that ties to the grant money that I understood that they had to implement it, how much income that's being generated, and if it's spread throughout the district. In addition, I got to say myself, I somewhat view it as a tax, because what we're saying is, going there, you have to pay the $25, it becomes a tax. Having said that, I really want to know if any student has had to leave the program or has left because of that $25 fee, and how many. Because I know when I voted for it, it was presented by all those that were representing it. It would be open to all, and it would be for those in any economic status. So if there's anyone that's been excluded, I'm very interested to know about that. So, and if you want to send that out in the transmittal line, that's good too.
But we definitely will. We definitely will.
Dates to remember: we definitely heard the public, and we will be closed on Martin Luther King Day. And I hope that the students take the opportunity to go to various celebrations throughout the community. We'll also, the next Board of Education meeting will be the 27th. No, we weren't.
We were on the official day to celebrate.
Well, the day the celebrations are made available to the students, we will be closed. We will be adjourned at 8:30 this evening.